You are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Katie's season of The Bachelorette and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to podcast number 241. I'm your host, Reality Steve. Thank you very much for tuning in. Good show for you today. First-time guest. His name is Dave Neal. He is a stand-up comedian, and he's a Bachelor recapper on YouTube. I know a lot of you have read him. A lot of you have sent me links to stuff that he has done over the years. And finally decided to have him on, and it was brought to my attention a couple weeks ago. He had recapped and reviewed my appearance on Wit and Rye's YouTube show, and I really appreciated what he said. And I'm not having him on just because he said good things and understood where I was coming from. I just saw it, liked the fact that he took the time to actually listen versus having a one-sentence hot take and looking for some clickbait stuff. So Dave's a great guest. You're going to love him. Get into some really good stuff in today's podcast, and that's coming up momentarily. So let's talk about the Bachelor in Paradise spoilers that I gave you yesterday. I think the biggest thing to take out of it, and to start off right off the bat, when I first released them yesterday, I said that Kenny and Mari and Riley and Marissa were engaged, but Joe and Kendall weren't about... Joe and Kendall. Whoops. That Joe and Serena P., weren't engaged, but they were together. About 4 or 5 hours later, I changed it on my website, I added it on my Instagram stories, and I put it in my Twitter feed. All three got engaged. So Joe and Serena Pitt did get engaged at the end of Paradise. So they were 3 for 3. Now, obviously, people are reacting to the three engagements, and they're like, Kenny, Mari, who, what, Riley, Marissa, she was, you know, first off on her season. Yes, she was. But what I can tell you, having done this for as long as I have, is I remember when I said at the end of season 3, Evan and Carly and Layson Grant got engaged along with Amanda and Josh, and the reaction was pretty much the same. Like, Evan and Carly, oh my God, where does that come from? I don't see them together at all. Layson Grant, what? Random. And, you know, people ended up liking it. Granted, none of them stayed together. Well, Evan and Carly did, but Amanda and Josh broke up and Layson Grant broke up. But, I'm not saying that these couples are going to last. I'm just saying, let's actually watch the show before you. And Dave and I kind of get into this today in the podcast. It's just like, everybody's got to have a hot take 3 seconds after they hear something. Like, let some stuff fester. Let some stuff actually sink in. Actually watch the couples together first. Before it's like, oh, Riley and Marissa, who cares? Like, who's Marissa? And oh my gosh, Kenny and Mari, huh? Like, who knows? Maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised. Doesn't mean they're going to last. And you know my stance on all these relationships, whether it's Bachelor or Bachelorette or Bachelor in Paradise. You know, the engagement is just a product of what the show wants you to do. Now, granted, Bachelor in Paradise couples spend way more time together with the person that they choose to be with at the end than the Bachelor lead does with the person they choose. Any Bachelor lead will tell you, if you add up all the hours that they spent with the person they finally chose, it's maybe 3-4 days total. Once you're down on the beach, you can sleep in the same bed with that person every night once you connect with them. So you do get more time with that person down in Paradise. However, it's still only a 3-week filming, and you're proposing to someone after 3 weeks. So, as I always say, in my eyes, until a couple moves in together, that's when it's a little more serious in my eyes. Even if they get engaged at the end of Paradise, to me, they're just dating. So just keep that in mind. Maybe the couples will work out. Maybe they won't. I mean, to me, it doesn't matter. My job isn't affected either way. If all three couples make it and are married for 20 years, or all three couples can't even make it until they film the reunion show, like, it does not matter to me in any way, shape, or form. I'm not cheering against any of them. I'm not cheering for any of them. I'm just reporting the news of, here's your engaged couples. But just to see the reaction, it is kind of weird because some people are already like, I hate this, or who cares, or thinking of all these reasons why Joe and Serena don't work, or Mari and Kenny don't work. And I'm just like, you haven't even seen them together yet. Like, it's bizarre, bizarre to me that it comes to that. But we know we get it every season. So one thing also, before we get to the Dave interview, let me just say, being in Texas, it's been, you know, it's been warm. It's been high 80s, low 90s last couple weeks. Well, when I woke up Tuesday morning, my air conditioner was broken. And so all day Tuesday and all day yesterday, for the most part, my air conditioner was broken. When I recorded this interview with Dave yesterday afternoon, my air conditioner was broken and I had a house that was 85 degrees. So you can't see it. I don't think it comes across in any way, shape, or form on the podcast, but I'm literally sweating through my shirt while I'm talking to Dave. And it was, it is fixed now. About 2 hours after Dave, I recorded the Dave interview. The repair guy came out, fixed it. As I record this open, it's still dropping from 85. I think last time I checked, it was down to 77. And I usually keep my place kind of cool. I usually keep it about 70 or 71, which I'm sure people will have a take on in 3 seconds. So anyway, that's thought I'd throw that in there. My house got up to 85 yesterday, and it was bad. Like, I didn't know what to do with myself. 85 degrees. And, you know, fans don't do much. All it does is swirl hot air. So finally got through it, though. And, So your Bachelor Paradise spoilers, like I said, you know the couples. Look, I gave as much as I could yesterday. It was like I said, it was more of just a spoiler dump. Like, here you go. This is everything that I've been told. There are people that were on the show that weren't even mentioned in my column yesterday. And not because I purposely left them out or whatever. It's just there's so many people that show up this season, and when they enter versus when they leave or how they leave. Like I said, I've got information about the spoilers, but some things I just don't have details behind. So I might, what I posted yesterday, I might have said something wrong in terms of a detail of maybe somebody actually went home at a rose ceremony when I said they left. I don't think any of those were wrong, but it is possible. But I wanted to get you the main things. I know you were all curious about, you know, who's engaged. What happened to Piper and Brendan? What happened to Kendall, Tia, Becca Kufrin, all that stuff. You wanted the big stuff, and I gave that to you. And hopefully that whet your appetite a little bit. The next thing I post about Bachelor in Paradise when it comes to spoilers is I'm going to try and break down rose ceremonies and who gave roses to who. Like, for each rose ceremony so far, I've got, like, 5 to 7 of them, but I know that's not all. And process of elimination, I could probably figure it out or maybe even guess or whatever. But Bachelor in Paradise doesn't start till August 16th. So I've got 6 weeks to put it all kind of together. And obviously, here's some more things that went down. Clearly, there was more drama than what I posted yesterday. I just don't know about all of it yet. So I will try and gather that over the next 6 weeks. And hopefully at some point before the premiere on August 16th, I'll have a lot more things laid out for you, and you can kind of follow along rose ceremony by rose ceremony of when people entered, who they went on dates with, and then at the rose ceremony, who gave roses to who, and when did people specifically leave. Probably won't have that nailed for every single contestant that showed up down there, but I'll be fairly close. So I hope you enjoyed those spoilers, and I think with Bachelor in Paradise, 6 weeks away, we've got Katie. I mentioned this in yesterday's column. Katie went on Nick Viles' podcast, and the big thing to come out of it that I've received the most emails on is, hey, Katie on Nick's podcast said, there is a villain this season worse than Thomas. Who is it? And, you know, what is she talking about? This is strictly a guess, but it is a fairly educated guess based on what I've heard about the guys that are left and knowing who lasts longer. I don't think someone that finishes, 10th, she's going to call out for being worse than Thomas, because that means they have to be really bad within the next 2 episodes, and I don't see that happening. I'm pretty sure, and almost 100% positive that the person she's talking about is Greg. The thing is, I don't know what Greg did to make her say something like that on Nick's podcast. But I think it's safe to say that it's not something she took very lightly. And I don't think it's just him deciding, oh, I want to leave or something like that. He clearly did something or maybe said something that is making her say that this was bad. And there's somebody out there worse than Thomas. So I guess I have time to try and figure that out and try and not figure it out, but just hopefully find out, like, what did Greg do or what did he say? So just keep that in mind going forward. I didn't listen to Katie on Nick's podcast. I know Dave did a YouTube video on it. If you want to go check that out, it's on Dave Neal's YouTube page. We talk about that a little bit on this podcast, and we do discuss, you know, the issues that I had a couple months ago and his coverage of it, which pretty much kind of led to this podcast coming about. And we do talk about the world we live in now with things that are said versus what was said years ago and the cancel culture world. And Dave does a really good job of giving his breakdown of it and, you know, talking about why it's okay to explain something even when you are apologizing. And that's what I think gets lost with a lot of people is they're looking for headlines, they're looking for clickbait, they're looking for specific things over the course of a, you know, 20, 30, 45 minute interview to just isolate one or two sentences and say that's what the podcast is all about. And so we talk about it. Really good conversation, goes for 90 minutes. And we kind of jump around to a lot of things and cover a lot of topics. So I think you're really going to enjoy this. So let's get started. Podcast number 241. All right, let's bring him in. He is a stand-up comedian and a Bachelor recapper on YouTube. His YouTube channel is Dave Neal. I know you've all seen his stuff. It is Dave Neal. Dave, how you doing?
Good, man. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been interesting because you're a name that has been out there for a while, and I've come across your videos. People have sent me clips to them sometimes, and it was a clip from about a week ago that someone had sent to me in when you did a video in response to my appearance on Wit and Rise, YouTube video. And, that's when I had gotten in contact with you. I don't know why I didn't before, so I apologize because I've always looked at your stuff. I can't say I've watched every video, but, here's something interesting. So when I went to your YouTube channel, I was like, all right, let me, go to this and kind of look at all this stuff and whatnot. You have on your YouTube channel where you just, you know, you just go to YouTube and type in Dave Neal and you can pull up your videos. You have a in your picture or whatever, it says Dave Neal stand up podcast and other funny stuff. You say new videos twice a week. and I was like, okay. And then I'm looking at your videos. So you did the recap of me on Wit and Rise podcast YouTube video, I think 8 days ago. Since you did that, you have released 27 videos.
Isn't that funny?
And we're recording this Wednesday afternoon. It's going to run Thursday. It's going to run the next day. You've already done two videos today. You already recapped Katie on Nick's podcast, and you've already recapped all the Bachelor in Paradise spoilers that I've done. How are you doing this?
Isn't it funny what a global pandemic will do to your work ethic?
Yeah.
I mean, I leave that YouTube header up that says two videos a week just as like a relic to what was. But I've learned how to streamline everything that I do. And my initial recaps were always like, I sort of take pride in not editing it. You know, I don't like jump edited videos.
Yes.
I like to just run it like a set, like stand up. And that's it. On one end, I like it just for my own performance aspect. But on the other, it saves me a lot of time of editing what's funny, what's not. Let's ramble, digressions and things like that. So then when I figured out how to like sort of niche down and make specific videos about like specific storylines, they just performed better than trying to cover it all in one long video.
Okay. Makes sense. And, you know, I want to get to your videos when we get to the Bachelor portion of the segment, but I want to first start out with your career. You're from Rhode Island, And you have been doing stand-up for how long? How many years have you been involved in stand-up?
I'm nearly a decade in. I've been in SAG for maybe pushing on 15 years. So I started with acting, then improv, then stand-up was like most things in entertainment. It's like the last resort, just because it takes a real low in your life to try to do stand-up. And then when I got into that, I was like, okay, this is the easiest way to present what you want to present without the gatekeepers of the industry, the pay to perform, pay to audition, all the other nonsense. So I'm pushing on 10 years of stand-up.
Okay. And how long have you been in LA? When did you make the move to LA or California?
I've been here several different runs between here and New York. I've been here permanently for about 7 years, moved out here to open for another comedian. And then it kind of just stuck this time. So I've been out here, for a good while now.
Okay. I know you said stand-up is, like you said, the third thing behind acting and commercials or whatever. I'm curious, is it something that when you were middle school, high school, was it something that you looked at as, I could see myself doing that someday? Or did this just not happen to you until later on in life?
I think that's a great question. The window of opportunity became a lot easier when I went to a comedy show and saw that not everyone was Chris Rock. Up until I moved to LA, the only comedy I had seen was crushing headliners, Dane Cook, Chris Rock, arena comedians. Mm-hmm. And you go, I can't do that. It's like watching, like David Copperfield. I can't do that. But then you see someone teach you a card trick and you go, oh, I can tell a joke. So it was kind of once I started dabbling in like open mics that I realized, okay, there's a long road to kind of building this all up. It's what's funny about it, not to speak of it in any sort of great way, but what's funny about stand-up is it's like the one thing that everybody thinks they can do. Like everybody thinks, oh, I could do that. And then you get up there and even 10 years in, I'm still bombing on just different jokes and trying to learn how to say things. But the mix with stand-up and Bachelor recaps is that the premise with the Bachelor world already exists. So I'm sure you're going to ask, but with Bachelor, the premise is we've all watched the show. So then the punchline is like, what's my take on it?
Yeah.
So that's why the Bachelor franchise became such an easy thing to cover, because it's one of the only water cooler shows left that the majority of people are still watching. You know, everything else is so niche down. I can't really do much with Too Hot to Handle. I can't really do much with, some other TV shows, but Bachelor's kind of still runs in that traditional media, once a week. And then, you can dissect it until the next episode comes out.
Yeah. And Too Hot to Handle, dumps four episodes at a time. And they're kind of also in on the joke. Like they're not trying to hide what they are. The Bachelor, for the most part, Bachelor and Bachelorette, take themselves rather seriously. And, this is a show about love and relationships and getting it. And, it's, after 42 seasons, we're kind of like, okay, when you've had a very low success rate and you realize it really isn't about somebody's love journey. It's more about, the travel before pandemic and the fighting in-house, whether it's the guys or the women. And it's so much more than just, who's going to make it to the end and who's going to end up getting proposed to. I mean, I think we all realize that by now.
I completely agree. I look at it this way. It's like if you're at a college basketball game and they offer you a chance to win a car by doing a half court shot. Maybe you win the car. You're still going to take the shot. None of these contestants think they're going to win. Yeah. And the win is, you fall in love and you get a platform. They go hand in hand. So with this week, the whole thing with Thomas and all this other stuff, it's like, come on, let's I would be the guy. I would be in Thomas's shoes where I would be like, come on, we're all here. Like, it'd be nice if we fall in love, but we're all here to just, see what happens. Like, the price you pay for being the only unpaid person on the show, camera guy's getting paid, sound guy, production assistant, Katie's getting paid. The only price you pay by letting them do whatever they want with your character is by getting some Instagram followers afterwards. Like, that's really it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I haven't listened to Katie on Nick's podcast. I probably won't for obvious reasons. But I also want to kind of, I have heard some things that she said. People have emailed me, and the biggest thing to come out of it is her saying that there's a bigger villain than Thomas this season. You just need to, you just need to wait. But the other things about Katie that people brought up to me was about the Thomas stuff. And I guess you can help me out here. She said something about there were things you didn't see when it came to Thomas. What was that? What did she say?
That's literally the only clip that I watched. Oh. And she, I try my best to, everyone's like, oh, you got to watch this, you got to watch that. But as you know, if I'm making 20 videos, I'm only going to, you know, catch a segment of everything. So with that, she said basically that Thomas had admitted to getting in a fight with Trey. And to be honest, I just see Thomas as kind of like a lower intelligent person as far as communication goes. So like maybe he's some crazy narcissist. And I know a lot of people look at him like, oh, he's sweet talking everybody. I think he's way more simple than that. I think he's like, oh, well, we're all here. You know, maybe I'd become the bachelor, but he's not. You didn't see him raise his voice once when he was being accused of all these things. He kind of kept his cool. So it'll be interesting to see like what, the more info we get about him, because you can only make like a snap judgment off of these guys before you actually hear them on a podcast. I mean, last year, no one liked Blake Moynes and I loved Blake. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, Blake, maybe he's not that bad of a guy. And it's like, yeah, maybe we're all, you know, my whole thing with the podcast is like, or my channel, maybe we're all just kind of good people trying our best with the information we have. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that there's something to be said for that, most definitely. And when I look at this whole thing, and I've reiterated in my column this season, is I don't have an issue with the whole bachelor thing that Thomas said. My thing is that he just seems to be somebody that like everything that comes out of his mouth seems like it's almost rehearsed, or he got it off of a meme that he saw online, or he's just telling a woman what he thinks she wants to hear. He just comes across as insincere to me. But the villain aspect and the villain title he's been given because he mentioned Bachelor, you've said it, I've said it. It's like all these guys have thought about it. You know, it's like, come on,
yeah.
let's be real here. And you've thought about it before you even went on the show. He maybe was dumb enough to verbalize it and actually admit it to the guys, like, yeah, I did. But that's my least amount of issues with my least issue with Thomas. I don't care about that. It's more of, he just comes across as a guy like a bullshitter. Just a guy that he's just saying what he thinks you want to hear. And you don't even know if you actually believe it or not, or he doesn't even know if he actually believes it.
And you know, maybe Katie's a little tougher in judging him because she had high hopes for him, you know?
Yeah.
So like she actually said in the interview with Nick, like she was hoping he might have made it to the fantasy suites. Like, you know, they were getting hot and heavy, you know, her Spanx were showing. It was quite the initial romance there. But my other thought with Thomas is like, if he is so precalculated, does that mean it's because he's trying to come off the best he can? Or maybe, you know, even with like a good looking, like he's like an Adonis. He's a gorgeous looking man. Even with all that said, maybe he's got his own insecurities. Maybe he's just not good at like talking to people and he's a little introverted. Like, we just don't know, you know, we just don't know. Like it could be, but I could be completely wrong. And I've been guilty with a lot of things of giving people way too much benefit of the doubt, that maybe I'm like the idiot who's just like, you know, being like, oh, he's trying his best with the information he has. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, because we only see, you know, for Thomas, we've seen 4 edited episodes on a television show. There could be a lot more to it. We will obviously see more when Paradise rolls around. Obviously, you've covered the spoilers, and we're going to talk about the spoilers on that. He is involved with Tammy at first, and then he moves on to Becca Kufrin, and, you know, she ends up ending it with him. But this is the question that I think Guy got asked the most in for my column today was, you know, well, why did she break up with him? How did she not know? Because she was doing her podcast from down in Mexico. Do you think she saw the episodes? Do you think his edit played a role in her eventually ending up dumping him? I'm like, look, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say yes, it did or no, it didn't, because I haven't been told either way. And I don't know exactly what Becca knew and when she knew it. It seems like if she had been able to view every episode while she was down in Mexico, it's almost like I'd say that's a kind of an advantage over everybody else. But then if you did see that, the universal sentiment regarding Thomas is, you know, not a good guy, bullshitter, like, oh my God, he's the worst. So why would then Becca give him a chance? You know, there's a lot of things we don't know at this point. But when you look at that and you see Becca and Thomas, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, yeah, she seems to be the type, and again, you know, we'll have to see how it goes, but she seems to be the type who gives people a chance. Like, she's, you know, here's the deal. She's single. She's, you know, dated a bunch of different guys. You're always single till you're not. You're just going to give people like whatever they give to you. So maybe Thomas, you know, maybe in a world where he's not competing with everyone else for attention and this and that, maybe he's like a loyal guy. It's wild for us to even speculate. You know, this happens in relationships where like I'll talk to friends and they'll be like, oh yeah, this guy's a jerk. And it's like, is he a jerk? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe you just weren't right. Or people saying about Blake, oh, this is his third attempt with the Bachelorettes. It's like, okay, he kissed a couple. This would be like one night out at a bar. You meet someone, you know, two drinks later, you don't like each other. You go try to meet someone else. I mean, in normal life, you get so many opportunities of like what works, what doesn't. So, you know, Thomas, he's going to be somebody's, you know, future guy. So I don't think he's going to be, you know, it's a big stretch for me to think that that's all they've got so far as a villain.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about Blake and the people that are saying that about Blake, you're kind of getting into semantics, because Claire's decision to leave with Dale had nothing to do with Blake. He went on one season. It's not like his third different season he's shown up on. He was been on one Bachelorette season before that happened to have two Bachelorettes for like the first time ever. So I get it. My thing with Blake was more about that line that he gave, you know, when Claire went off with Dale and he talked about buying an Alzheimer's book. And I really dove into that because I wanted to understand where she was coming from and what do I get out of it? Like, he was supposed to, like, he deserves something for buying an Alzheimer's book.
Right.
And, you know, that was my issue with Blake, but it was one thing. It was one instance. That's pretty much the only thing I remember from his time on Claire and Tayshia's season, you know?
And of course that could just be him being tone deaf to be, you know, when you get rejected, and we can talk about, you know, other forms of rejection you and I have both received, but when you get rejected, it brings out like that ego and that quick response. You know, in my relationship, I've really had to learn not to like be so defensive when I get rejected, because my fiance, she'll be mad about something and I'll be like, but I just cleaned the living room. Like, it makes no sense what like my response will be, but it's like me trying to prove that I'm an eligible guy. Yeah. So for Blake to be like, but I bought you a book on Alzheimer's, it sounds horrible. But for this poor guy, he's trying to be like, but I am here for the right reasons. But I understand that that's not the way to win someone over.
Yeah, no, it was kind of cringy when he said that, but then again, like the rest of the season, it seemed like he was really into Tayshia, and that's I guess what people have an issue with, like, oh, he was all in on Claire and then Claire left and he was all in on Tayshia, and then 6 months later he's all in on, you know, Katie. So it's like, look, I don't know, there's a lot behind the scenes that I'm not aware of this season. Clearly Katie has addressed on the show and off the show that the Blake and her pre-show relationship was very, very minimal. And it was more about just him being a guy in the franchise that hit up a girl that he saw on the next season after him, which all these guys do now.
Oh yeah.
Why they singled out Blake to bring him on Katie's season, I don't know. Maybe they really thought that she had an liking towards him, or maybe she gave producers an inkling that, hey, if this guy was interested in me, I'd be interested in him. Maybe she gave them that, and that's why they brought him on. But he reaching out to her is, I'm telling you, it happens all the time. And a little funny story, behind-the-scenes story, not necessarily this season, but past seasons, I've had women from this franchise tell me about being hit on by other guys in the franchise, and all these women talk to each other. Some of these guys aren't creative enough. They'll just cut and paste their intro to these women and send it off. And these women all share it. Like, did you get the same message? Yeah, I got the same message from him as you did. And I've actually seen them. I'm not going to out the guy of who it was, but yeah, even that happens. So it happens all the time. I don't know why Blake got chosen, because I'm sure there are other guys from Claire and Tayshia's season that saw Katie on Matt's season and were like, hey, I think I'd be into her, but they didn't get a chance to be on the show. So we don't know.
You know, that's so funny the way you mentioned that, you know, women will use all these clues and put them together. There is no greater way to to get a bunch of people on the same side as figuring out a guy is, you know, an F boy or whatever.
Yeah.
There's something very magical that happens. It's like when you know, someone sees someone else was cheated on and they link up with them and, you know, because you're trying to help each other out. Cause everyone's been in a situation where they've been with someone who wasn't taking them as serious as they want to, you know, the relationship to go. And when you add in the fact that you're on a platform where they're all making money off of this, then of course it, you know, I've always said I've been lucky as like a no-name comedian that my fiance, she fell for me, you know, way before I was bringing in any, you know, income or whatever. But like, if you're making money, if you have the chance to have your relationship be something where people like become fans of you, that throws in all these different dynamics to like wanting to be liked and all that.
Yeah. I think one instance recently that we can even bring up where you talk about women getting together and combining stories was just a couple months ago, this whole Rachel Kirkconnell, Matt James, before they got back together, this whole thing that I was brought out into the forefront when I had this girl named Grace from Florida on my Instagram Live. And she told the story about, yeah, this guy was trying to get with me 2 days before he flew Rachel to New York. And then Rachel and Grace, after I put Grace on the Instagram Live, got in touch with each other and just combined stories and realized Matt was, you know, what she had said was true. And Grace told Rachel, like, this is when he contacted me. This is what he said. And Rachel's looking at this like, wait, he was saying this all while he was talking to me. Now, granted, 2 weeks later, I guess she forgave him for all that because Rachel has been on Matt's side ever since. But perfect example of women love to get together and compare stories about, an, like you said, a fuck boy or a guy that they think is playing them. And it's happened a lot in this franchise, too.
Now, and not to make it, and I brought this up as a gender thing, but I think it would work. I think it doesn't work the other way around because women aren't as conniving as men are. So, or maybe as simple-minded. So I feel like men, if there were women that were just in it for all the wrong reasons going after guys, I'm sure guys would talk, but it really does seem to be one-sided with the men sort of reaching out and sliding into the DMs. And I'm sure there's examples that will prove it otherwise, but with the Grace instance, now, how did you feel afterwards knowing that Rachel and Matt ended up getting back together?
I mean, look, I felt that I gave her a heads up, and by putting Grace on, then I was contacted after the fact to make sure that Rachel and Grace did speak to each other. They did. They compared notes. They realized that nothing that Grace reported or nothing that I reported was a lie. It was true what he was doing. And then to see 2 weeks later that they got back together, I just don't know what Matt said. He clearly had a way with words to where, I don't know. All I can say is it's Rachel's life. It's not mine. This is what she chooses to do, that's what she chooses to do. I particularly am a little bit skeptical because the stuff with Grace did happen. But clearly they've gotten past that, whatever you want to call it, boulder in their relationship. And she has moved past it. I have not spoken to her since that all went down. So I don't know. So all I can look at it from the outside is just say, hey, they obviously had to talk about it. Matt must have explained something. She must be a very forgiving person. And they're together and they seem, and it's been 2 months and they literally have spent every day together, it seems like. So I guess things are going for them. So I guess good for them.
Yeah, you know, I give Matt a benefit here, and you know, both of them, honestly, because, you know, there was a lot of like talk that must have had to happen about defining the relationship, and maybe by keeping his conversation with Rachel Kirkconnell on the DL because of all of the issues that were going on, maybe he did, you know, fly too close to the sun there. And I give him the benefit because I don't think he's ever been in a serious relationship before. And then for Rachel to be like, this isn't going to fly again. This is like the last and only chance you'll get if that's what happens. You know, it looks like he's risen to the occasion and decided like, all right, you know, I'm going to work for this. And that's a good, sometimes it's good to have someone like set like really clear boundaries so you don't get walked on. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes you can be like a good person, like Matt James seems like a good guy. And then maybe you can still like be really messy at handling a once in a lifetime situation like that.
You know what? That's right. I totally forgot about the one thing that we have heard about Matt and Rachel since that all went down is Matt did do an interview where he specifically said, Rachel laid it down for me. Like, look, if you want to be with other women, that's fine, but you're not going to be with me. And Matt said in an interview, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically said, she called me out on my shit, and I realized this is what I want, and what he wanted was her. So, yeah, I totally forgot about that. So it looks like that's what it was. She gave him an ultimatum of, look, you can play the field and play around, but I just don't want to be part of it. And then he had the option, and it looks like the option he chose was, I don't want to do that, I want to be with you. So that's where we're at with them. I totally forgot about that conversation, that interview that he did. I think it was with People. And so, yeah, it looks like that's where they're at. And
now, do you think you would do that type of conversation again with Grace? Because I'm sure you were as shocked as we all were that she actually wanted to, like, go live with you.
Yeah, that was the weird thing, because for the longest time when she was talking to me pre that, she was saying, like, I don't want to get involved, but here's the proof that this was true. And I said, okay, and it's true. And then when I did my Instagram live telling everybody about Grace for the first time, right after I literally stopped, she texted me and said, I want to come on with you. I was like, oh, okay. So, and then we went live like 5 minutes after that live ended, where I told everybody what was going on with Matt and the whole situation. So, yeah, it was really weird. I didn't expect it, because she had told me the whole time, like, look, I'll tell you what you want to know and I'll tell you what happened, but I just don't want to be involved in this. I'm kind of a lower profile girl. I ride horses down in Florida, and it's just not for me. But I just found it funny when I saw that he was with Rachel this weekend when on Sunday he was basically booty calling me and trying to get me, knowing he was leaving the next morning to go to New York. He's trying to get me to come down and go to, I think, at Miami at the time, like, come to Miami and hang out with him for the night. And she goes, I just thought that was weird. Saw that he was with Rachel. So I figured, and people told me I should contact you, because I don't know how much, I don't think Grace was dialed into this Bachelor franchise at all. I don't think she had known who I was before then, but she said people told her to contact me. So she did. Yeah. We talked, I told the story, and then 5 minutes, she's like, you know what? I want to come on. I'm like, okay. So yeah, I was surprised that it happened, for sure. Didn't think,
you know, I had a, my engagement is my first, like, real proper define the relationship. You know, I lived in New York. No one's dating in New York. Everyone's running around. And I remember I had a girl who was a friends with benefit, like a friend, like friend first, but friends with benefit, from before I was in my current relationship. And I remember, like, I remember early on when I started dating my fiance Tasha, that there was like some funny thing had happened, and I sent a photo of it to her, and she was like, why are you texting me? She's like, aren't you dating someone? I was like, yeah, but this was just a funny thing. So, like, she was like, yeah, you don't text me. And I was like, oh, this is that moment where, like, I should have known better, but I've never been in the relationship. Now, not to say Matt James didn't know he was doing something wrong, but there might have been a gray area where he was just like, I don't, you know, it sounds, this is the problem. And I talk about this all the time. When you try to explain something that was wrong, it looks like you're trying to justify it, and yeah, that's not what I'm trying to do. And I know you've been guilty of this, where what? People have given you issues for trying to explain things that you're apologizing for. And it's like, if we can't guilty with explanation, if we can't explain how we think we went wrong, how are we going to, like, show other people that we've recovered or learned or evolved?
Yeah. And that's how you and I got in contact. Like I said, about eight days ago, you had done a review that someone forwarded to me about my appearance on Wit and Rye, which some people had reached out to me, said, oh, you haven't learned anything, you're not apologizing. And I'm like, are you watching the same video that I did? Like, I've never not, you know, apologize for what happened. My past writings, which we'll get into just in general, and then the Demi phone call. I've owned it from the day that Demi posted that. I've owned that it happened. I've never denied it. I said it was a mistake. But in trying to say, hey, just so you know, this is how the phone call went. Because she did present it in a way where, if I was a person who didn't know anything about the situation and I read what Demi wrote on Twitter about Reality Steve approached me and told me about a sex dream he had, to me, as an outsider knowing nothing, I would have read that as, oh my God, this guy was, like, totally had his pants down and was breathing heavy into the phone when he was talking to Demi, telling her about this graphic sex dream he had. And that, all I was saying was, that wasn't it. It was not that. I did not say that made the phone call right. I was just trying to explain, like you talked about, explain what the phone call was. And it was just me telling Demi I had one about her. It wasn't graphic. I wasn't trying to pick up on her. I had a girlfriend at the time. My girlfriend knew about it. I had told my girlfriend about it. She didn't know I had told Demi until this Demi story broke. But I had told my girlfriend at the time I had one. I had a sex dream about Demi last night. It was so random. And like I said, it was more about the fact that a month earlier, Demi hated me. And we both kind of did. I wasn't a fan of her. She wasn't a fan of me. But then we had gotten to a point where we were actually texting each other and just being playful, not sexual at all or not hitting on each other at all or anything like that. Playful in the matter of we could actually have a civil conversation when, you know, a month earlier she hated me. And that's why I told the story to her, because I thought it was funny. Clearly, mistake. Never should have happened. I own it. I never should have told her that. But when I explained it on the Whit and Rye podcast, on the Whit and Rye YouTube show, it turned into, you're trying to excuse what you did. I'm like, no, I'm not trying to excuse it. But like you said, it's tough. It's tough to explain something when you're trying to apologize, because the second you start to explain, it turns into you're making an excuse.
Yeah. And here's the deal with like where we are as a country with our critical thinking skills and like media literacy, is that we get all of our news from headlines. We don't watch full clips. So to watch all of that, you go, okay, I've heard your apology. Now you're explaining it. And of course you bookend it with beginning and end saying this was wrong. And then Whit and Rye kind of come at you and go, come on, you knew this was wrong. And that's where, I'm glad like they asked you that, but I'm glad you kind of were like, no, I didn't. And it doesn't mean it was right. It just means your head was in a place where like, did you really think you were no one does anything thinking like, oh, I'm going to get canceled today. I'm going to go do this. It's like a boneheaded decision. And I think you owe it to us, and everyone does, to explain those decisions versus just saying apologize and don't explain anything. Like nothing good happens if we don't get to have those long form conversations. And that's kind of like where we're at, where you're not going to change people's minds that are still going to believe that. But I think most people will go, okay, he's changed his writings. He's changed other things. You learn by crossing the boundary. And maybe I know this as a stand-up comedian, because I've gone on stage and tried jokes that didn't work. And I've realized, is it me? Is it them? Am I not framing this right? And you learn that if your intention is good, you rework it. Now with that instance, it's like, you know, there's a million different things that could have been going on. You're trying to, I feel like a slime ball even trying to like summarize it. But that's the point, is that it's worth at least talking your way out of it.
Yeah. And you know what? And I talked about this with you off air in regards to the Whit and Rye interview. Let's also look at it this way. And this is one thing that I want to make perfectly clear when it comes to Whit and Rye. I've been doing their show for 2 or 3 years now. Every time they ask me to come on, I do it. And I knew that the whole point was they wanted to have me on to talk about that stuff. And I knew it. I wasn't blindsided by anything they said. But the thing that I wanted to say was, I could have answered every single one of Whit and Rye's questions with, yeah, you know what, guys, I screwed up. I just don't want to talk about this anymore. But I have too much respect for them, and I wasn't going to come on their show and basically give, that would be the equivalent of the cliche answer that an athlete gives when he is asked at the end, oh, we just gave 110% team effort, you know, all that stuff that we hear all the time. I could have given those answers to Whit and Rye, and then that the interview would have gone nowhere. It just would have been like, well, Steve, why did we have you on if you're not going to talk a little more in depth about this stuff? That was the reason I went on, was to talk about it a little more in depth. However, like you said, there's a faction out there that when you start going in depth on an apology, turns into, is this an apology or an excuse? And again, I wasn't making any excuses. Like you said, bookended it with, I was wrong, I never should have done this, but here was my thinking at the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's where I stand. And also because, and by the way, all we can talk about is what's fascinating to us. And I think this is way more fascinating than Thomas, but you know, people now like your name and I don't, this is actually probably a compliment to you, is Radioactive right now. I'm going to get some people that are going to be like, Dave, why the hell would you talk to him? Mm-hmm. I know Whit and Rye had to make a YouTube post being like, just listen to the interview first, you mongrels. Like everyone, like, you know, I don't think you're, you know, 1992 Chernobyl, but 2021 Chernobyl. You can still walk through it. Don't lick the poles. Like there's something to that. And I think that for me, everything I preach on my channel, everything is like, all right, hear people out. Rachel Kirkconnell, hear her out. Kim Kirkconnell, Rachel's mom, hear her out. Listen to Rachel Lindsay, hear her out. I love Rachel Lindsay. Like, hear them out. And so then if I wouldn't talk to you, I'm more afraid of backlash than the honest truth and the honest perspective that you have regarding it all.
Yeah, it's almost this whole idea of something you mentioned earlier, just headline reading, clickbait, whatever you want to call it. People are just focusing on that, and they don't want to hear the full story about certain things. And, you know, like I said, with Whit and Rye, it was just me going a little more in depth, but at no point was I ever trying to excuse what I've did. And you know, I'll continue to say it. I never should have told Demi that. And, you know, apologize to her behind the scenes and publicly. She hasn't acknowledged it. There's nothing I can, at this point, like, it's like, okay, Demi called me out for something that I did that made her feel uncomfortable. I apologized to her publicly and privately. I haven't gotten anything in return. Let's move on. I mean, what else can be done at this point? There's nothing else can be done. If she doesn't want to accept the apology or acknowledge it, there's nothing I can do about that. But that's,
yeah. And I think what's more important is like the platform that you have and that I have, and that, you know, people have to talk about things. What's more important is like having the conversations and less whether or not she forgives you. And I think it's good that, like you said, you could have just said, I'm moving on. It probably wouldn't have affected the people that loved you. And that's what, you know, that's what people do. They niche down, they keep their supporters and, you know, they don't deal with the rest. But I got to say, credit where it's due, that you're just going to be, you know, what I know on one end you feel like in some ways you might, and I don't want to speak to you, but it might feel like you're relitigating everything. But the biggest response I think people are giving that don't trust your apology is that you come off defensive to them. Mm-hmm. And maybe, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. But for me, like I said before, I come off defensive when my fiance says that the dishes need to be done. I'm like, I was doing the laundry. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, I immediately have to realize how defensive I get, because I know I mean well, my intentions are good. So do you think the defensiveness is burning off, or do you think that's just how you come off?
I guess it's how I come off, because I don't really, I guess when you're accused of something, any sort of response is considered a defense, right? Like the minute you start talking, when somebody asks you about something you did, they can immediately say, well, why are you being so defensive? Well, because you just asked me about this. I'm just answering what you said. So I get that a lot on email sometimes, where somebody will come after me with, and I'm not even talking about this stuff from 2 months ago, before that, or even post that, somebody will come after me on an email and really attack me for something. And then I literally will take their email. Sometimes I just hit delete because I just don't want to deal with it. But sometimes somebody really gets me fired up in an email that they send me. And then I take their email and I break it down sentence by sentence and tell them this isn't right, or this is totally incorrect. This is factually incorrect information that you're spewing at me. And then the response is, geez, why'd you get so defensive? I'm like, did you read your initial email to me? Like, I don't know what you want me to do. Like I said, I guess I could have just deleted it. But yeah, there are some times where I respond and I guess it comes off as being defensive, but maybe I just don't know what the definition of defensive is, because I'm being accused of something and I'm responding to it. So I guess it automatically means I'm on the defense for it.
Yeah. Now, could you imagine if you were employed by ABC and they told you not to respond? So like with Chris Harrison and even Rachel Kirkconnell, I've said till I'm blue in the face, I think they should have done every podcast, and, you know, they let, and again, this is just my belief, they let Rachel Kirkconnell, like while she could have spoken earlier, I think they wanted her to wait till after the final rose, so that they would get the ratings. But they created a wildfire, and so this whole issue came from them sort of hyping up this racial controversy that they should have nipped in the bud right away. But Chris Harrison, I think he thought if he was just going to be quiet and it was all going to mull over, and then he'd have his job back. And I, you know, obviously, as we've seen, it didn't. And I think that was his, I think it was his job to keep if he just went out and talked about it, you know?
Yeah. I think we both know if he never does the interview with Rachel Lindsay, he's still the host to this day, because I don't think they were on a path to where, even though the show was taking a lot of shit for lack of diversity and whatnot, I don't think that they were on a path like Dancing with the Stars, where Tom Bergeron was the face of that franchise forever, and then they just said, you know what, we're going with Tyra Banks. We want to skew to a younger audience. I think The Bachelor knew their audience. Everyone was comfortable with Chris Harrison, and he wasn't going anywhere, despite criticism that they were taking in the public eye for lack of racial diversity and lack of issues ever being talked about on this show. So if he never goes on with Rachel Lindsay, he's still the host of this show. The thing about Chris, and this goes into kind of the next thing I wanted to talk about, this whole idea of cancel culture versus more of an accountability culture, is, you know, it's not like people found 8-year-old tweets of Chris Harrison and dug them up. Like, these were thoughts he had in 2021. It is a lot different than people who are losing their jobs over stuff that was written by them years ago and whatnot. And it's tough, because another thing that was, you know, talked about on the Wit and Rye podcast that they seem to have, you know, a little bit of an issue with me, but you and I have talked about, is, look, whether people want to admit it or not, you were allowed to say things 5, 6, 7 years ago that you just can't say today. It was part of the culture, and it doesn't mean it was right. It certainly wasn't, but it was what it was. That was, you were allowed to do that. And the Britney Spears documentary is the biggest example of that. But there were, trust me, there were tons of others. I brought up the, you know, the websites that I talked about in the interviews, you know, Perez Hilton and, The Superficial and What Would Tyler Durden Do, all that stuff. It was a thing to objectify women in the media. It was. It sucked. It never should have been, but that's what people did. And I just went along with the crowd. And then after a while, when the Me Too movement hit, is when I started opening my eyes. Some people still haven't opened their eyes. Some people realized that a little bit before, but I can admit that the Me Too movement is what really made me look at things differently than I used to, because I used to believe that stuff years ago. I know Wit called me out on it, like, Steve, you're a grown man, you should know this. And I said, no, I don't. I had a 20-year-old bachelor sense of humor, and I did not know that was, like, wrong because other people were doing it and not losing jobs because of it or getting called out because of it, if that makes sense. You know?
Yeah, and it's layered too. It's like you learn, okay, these words aren't happening, and this is a good thing. It's evolving to now where it's like, don't talk about the woke police without expecting somebody to want to break that down for you. Like, what do you mean when you say woke police? Like, we've learned now that there are certain words that trigger like a response to be like, oh, really? You think that people, you know, getting shot in the streets, okay? Like, you know what I mean? So we've gotten to a place where we've sort of taken layers off and got to the like more nitty gritty. But yeah, you're right. If you watch the Britney Spears documentary, you have literally like well-known journalists, both men and women, slut shaming, sex shaming Britney Spears. And she's like this young woman. She's seen as a commodity. And that's what existed. Of course, Perez Hilton now feels like he's the bully. He's being bullied by people, but there is like, that all happened. And it doesn't mean it was right. It just means in hindsight, we are addressing it now. And I think what Chris got a lot of hate for was by saying, you know, also by saying, hey, in 2018, it wasn't, you know, was it okay in 2018? You know, I can't go line by line by what he said, because I think if he could have done that interview 1,000 more times, he would have found better ways to get his point. Like, he did a bad job of prosecuting his point, but also it's a bad medium, first of all, to be doing, to be doing it the way they did, but like 8 or 10 minutes. These are complicated conversations.
Yeah.
So for me to go on my platform and say, hey guys, I'm sorry, I need to learn about antebellum. I don't know this. I'm Dave from Rhode Island. I've lived in several major cities. Maybe it was the education system. Maybe it was my own ignorance. I don't know a dang thing about this. And people want to almost say like, how could you not? And it's like, do you want to know my truth or not? It's so much easier to tell the truth. And I don't know anything about this. And I've had to do a lot of my research. And you know, my fiance's from Kentucky. Like she was taught about certain things that were completely wildly different. We need to address, like, as a country, how broken and biased our education system is.
For sure.
That people don't know what Juneteenth is. People don't know what a lot of the massacre in Tulsa. People don't know these things. And we're still learning. And it's 2021. So Chris Harrison messed up on so many levels. But the way out of it, in my opinion, would have been to go on a lot of podcasts and do a lot of talking. And the old school kind of crisis PR thing is, oh, let it mull over. But of course, what happens? Chris Harrison hires power attorney Brian Friedman, and we'll never get the story now. Yeah. So we're all let down by not getting the counsel part of it all.
Yeah, and you said there are layers to what he said. Like, granted, there was a 15-minute interview, and I got the point that Chris was originally trying to make, which was, hey, lay off Rachel, let her speak before we crucify her. And that part I agreed with, because I think he was basically saying, well, not basically saying, Chris knew that Rachel was getting death threats. Chris knew that Rachel was being called KKK Kirkconnell. And I think he was just saying, look, let's back off that part of it. Like, can we show a little more grace towards her? Not saying show grace towards what she did, which was participate in an antebellum party. It was show grace towards her until she speaks. And that's where his big that part I was fine with. It was when he started talking about 50 million people attended these parties. No, where'd you get that number? And no, that's not 25% of the population did not attend an antebellum party in 2018. So,
isn't that wild? Whenever you start throwing out statistics, it's always going to be like, oh, right, this is going in a weird place. Well, you know, the Holocaust, it's like, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
It's never to win over a progressive mind. It's always like, okay, you got too many specific. Why do you know all this info? But obviously, the interview, it just what happened afterwards grew all this sort of momentum.
It snowballed.
Yeah.
It snowballed, and he basically... You know, and then just the fact that it was Rachel Lindsay, a black woman, he was very condescending. He was talking down to her. The way he treated that interview just came across as very, very elitist. And I think the way he talked to Rachel, the way he was misrepresenting facts about antebellum, I think had way more to do with why he does no longer have a job than him just saying, hey, let's back off Rachel, because he was basically just saying Rachel is getting death threats. And no matter what anybody does on this show, outside of killing somebody, nobody on this show as a contestant should be getting death threats from the fans, no matter what they did. And I think that was his initial point. The problem was he couldn't shut up after that, and he just kept going.
Yeah.
And that's what got him in trouble.
And that again, kind of speaks to his defensiveness, as he kind of realized he was... But, I mean, he went into the interview to defend her in the first place. What would have worked better is if she just spoke out originally. And it all, for me, comes down to the producers being like, no, hold off. They're like an army general waiting to attack. Just wait for the, you know, till we can profit off of this. And then it all blows up in their face. If the producers and other executives of The Bachelor all did a roundtable podcast, I mean, get your coffee out, make it as long as possible. Like, my channel's doing well because of the unlimited bandwidth to talk these things out. Mm-hmm. I've talked about it about 9 days longer than Chris ever did, but it's because I'm getting phone calls from people on all sides from all over the world that are wanting to talk about it. So there is a net positive there. I just think it could have come before he lost his job over it. And I think Rachel Kirkconnell, when she finally was like, you know what, enough's enough. When she finally released her apology, it might be the best apology that Bachelor Nation has got.
For sure.
You know, when you look at Taylor Nolan, Hannah Brown. I mean, can you imagine Hannah Brown? Like, the fact that she is just, you know, counting her rosary, you know, bead blessings every morning that she didn't get canceled any farther for that. And I think that, so the truth just goes to show, you got to get your message out and speak from your heart. And you know, Rachel Kirkconnell does this 8-minute video. She's lost a bunch of weight. She looks horrible. You know, she just looks horrible and she feels bad. And even then she didn't win people over, but what happens, and you'll, you know, attest to this, over time with her right choices she makes, she's going to prove people wrong, or she's not, But I think she's going trending in that direction of learning, growing. And now the million people that follow her get to see that versus not see that at all. And it goes in, like the other direction would be. And I you know, this is like maybe a master's class of people in Bachelor Nation. But Becca's Garrett, right? He became defensive of everyone hating him. And it's like, bro, that defensiveness, you've got to double down and do like, you know, wildlife commercials for the rest of your life, because your only fan base is going to be, you know, people that buy Yeti coolers, which is fine. I have a Yeti cooler. But the point is that he didn't give himself the room to grow. And that defensiveness shows as like guilt, where the evolved person would be like, you know what? Yeah, I did something wrong. I'm going to talk my way into finding the right answers. And then Bachelor Nation and then everyone in general can decide if they forgive the person or not. And I think most people have understood that Rachel Kirkconnell's like not as bad as she might have been that day. And she's trying to be a better person. And I think we all are trying to do that. It's just we get to make mistakes and, you know, before social media on our own time. And we don't get we don't get that unearthed, you know, when it happens on, you know, to private citizens.
And yeah, and that's really all I've tried to do, you know, since everything came out with me, is just trying to evolve. And I'm just trying to, you know, be better. Clearly I'm not going to make a phone call like that to anybody else. I don't write like that. I've readjusted my relationships within the franchise in terms of how in the future going forward, if I have information about something that could help somebody else, not to involve myself, which is what I got called out for. Another thing that I got called out for. And then, you know, this power dynamic, I never understood it, and everyone's telling me, how could you not understand it? I'm like, because I didn't look at myself that way. Like, I don't know what I don't know. And then that was like the first time it was brought to my attention, you have this power over us. And I was like, oh, okay. I get it now, but I'm telling you, I did not know this, because whatever power I had, I never tried to wield it over anybody. Now, there is a couple stories out there where people claim that I did, and I was just like, I can't get into that stuff, because then we're diving deeper and I'd have to expose things about some people, and I'm just not going to do that. So I'm just going to say, look, I never did that. And anybody out there that says I wielded power over them and manipulated them or forced them to tell me something or else I was going to say something about them, that never, ever, ever happened, and it never would. But going forward, I just have to be a little more careful of how I'm going to approach certain situations like that. And that's all I've tried to do, is just be better. And it's not going to happen in 2 months. Like, this story came out 2 months ago. It doesn't mean like from this day forward, everybody's got to forgive me and I should be forgiven and everybody should like my site. I guess it'll take people time, but the longtime fans know that I, you know, the writings that I used to have, I haven't written like that in years. And then I'm going to continue not to write about that like that. Continue to not write that way. And then spoiler aspect, I think people have seen just in the short term, I'm just kind of laying the spoilers out there. I'm not really giving many opinions anymore, because yeah, I'm a little miffed that everything I say is taken as this negative against a contestant, when it's just not. It's just an opinion of what I know, versus, because let's face it, there's levels of opinion. You can have an opinion on something that you watched on television and be like, oh, I like that or I don't like that. Then you can have an opinion on something where you know a little bit more about the situation that helped you form your opinion. So I've run into that issue where I know more about situations, but without revealing how I know, and which would essentially be giving up a source, I can't talk about it in a particular way. So even if I just fire off an opinion about anything, it's like, well, are you saying that because that's what you think or because you know something else? It's just like, okay, this is getting way too confusing.
Yeah. Well, you know, but here's the one of the biggest I think positives from being able to talk about things is the talk about power dynamic. And women for the longest time have had to deal with sexist bosses. And you know, horror stories we hear, you know, when people, you know, share their stories. I mean, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. So then to think power is equity, right? Power is just like control. It's It's having something that someone else doesn't. So you can, by all means, think that you're just a guy who's created your own business and created your own life, and you don't get the respect from any of the media that covers the show, yet they use all of your sources. You don't get any respect from the Bachelor contestants, yet they, in some cases, you might think, don't follow the same business practices you do. So it's hard to know that you've got power until it's kind of explained that way. And, you know, we've had to learn this, you know, dating back several years in the Me Too movement with Louis C.K. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the show creator of the show Louis at the time that he was accused of masturbating in front of women in their hotel room, in his hotel room. So he honestly didn't. And again, I'm not here defending him. I'm just saying the topic of power dynamic for him was like, I'm not a booker of a comedy club. I'm not going to blacklist you. But they're like, no, you're a larger figure within the community. You've got a power in a different sense that you've got, like, in his case, clout is power. It's equity. It's all kind of the same thing. So for you, you could be operating with the best of intentions and not realize, like, you're like a pitcher who throws 99 miles an hour. When you throw it up by someone's chin, it's going to be a little bit different than if a knuckleballer does. So you don't realize you're throwing a 95 mile an hour fastball, but to a lot of the Bachelor community, you are. You're the guy who some people's opinions are changed based on what you think of them.
Yeah.
And that's just something that, like, I'm sure you had probably no idea that was even the case.
Yeah, it's just, it never, I mean, I knew I had a, obviously, I know I have a large fan base and a following that loves hearing the spoilers. And then, you know, when I say something about a contestant, I realize it holds more weight. My power dynamic was more along the lines of the specifics that I was called out for, that I use it against people, and I specifically, like, literally manipulate people into telling me things or else I'm going to say something negative about them. And that's just never happened. And
right.
So that's what upset me. But yeah, again, I spoke out against it, again, to quote unquote defend myself, because that did not happen. And it turns into, you know, like, oh, I'm excusing it. And it's just like, no, I'm just saying this didn't happen.
Well, like, to use the same shitty analogy, it's like if you've never hit anyone in the head with a fastball, the person is still afraid of that high and tight fastball. So it's and that's what's good about talking about it, is because you could have had no ill intentions of hurting someone, and someone can still have been fearful. And now through the conversation, there's so much, you know, that could be spoken about all of it. You know, my favorite comic is Bill Burr. He's just one of the best of all times. He's so good at prosecuting both sides in his jokes. So he'll take both sides. So it's really hard to not understand where he's coming from, because he'll cover all angles. So when he writes a joke, he's like, all right, what are the haters going to say about this? All right, let me cover that. And for me, when it comes to, like, my, and I'm wrong a lot, but when it comes to my channel, I want to hear all sides. So even if I do have an opinion that leans in one direction or the other, at least I, like, exhausted all angles of it. And I think that that's where most of the country is. Most of the country is somewhere in the middle, you know, of, like, what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
It's just on Reddit and Twitter and other places that you hear the people that, like, are aggressively for or against whatever your opinion might be.
Yeah, because we live in a hot take world now, because you got these debate shows where you have to take a stance on something. Is like, everything is made out to be, whether it's sports talk radio, which is my background, which is something that I literally almost can't stand anymore, because sports talk radio is, if you're a host, you have to have a stance of, oh, this happened and I have to take this stance, and if I'm going to debate somebody, they have to be on the other side. When in reality, in sports, pretty much everything is, there's a lot that's in the gray area. But yet, to be a good sports talk show host, you have to have these hard-hitting takes, and you have to be on one side or the other, when in reality, most stuff is not black or white when it comes to sports. It's gray. And that's where we're at almost with this franchise as well. It's like this, it's all in the middle. Like, I get you want to hate on Thomas, and then there's people who are like, Thomas isn't that bad. Yeah, he's in the middle. Like, there's nothing that says that Thomas is the worst human ever and the biggest villain this show has ever seen. And, oh, my God, I can't stand him. He's the worst. And it's just like, okay, he's probably somewhere in the middle.
If I ran into you at an airport and we had a beer together, someone might want to cancel me. But others would be, oh, cool, they're hanging out having a beer.
Yeah.
It's just, And you know, with the society, we really need to do some soul searching, because the whole business model for media is clicks. And so you see it on the left, you see it on the right, niche down, get your clicks, you know, and that's so wrong. So for me, like, I'm guilty of a thumbnail that might be sensationalized or whatever. Absolutely. But I'm going to give you 30 minutes trying to break it down as best as possible, 22 videos in 4 days. And I'm going to try to work it out. So when someone responds to my stuff with like a one line comment, I'm like, oh, that's what took me 30 minutes to say, you're able to paraphrase in one line. I woke up and this is all kind of new to me, because just a year ago I had 2,000 subscribers, and then I kind of changed some things up and it's at 35,000. So I'm getting about 1 to 2 million views a month. And I woke up a couple months ago to a thread that I was like the conservative voice of Bachelor Nation or something like that. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm a very progressive person, but I couldn't believe how mischaracterized I was for having conversations. And my only thought was, if I made 7 videos in a row about Matt James and Rachel Kirkconnell, they watched video 5 that had a specific angle. And the creator, it was on the Bachelor the BIPOC subreddit, which I've never gone on, but he apologized to me several days later and said he actually listened to the videos and it was way more reasonable than they thought. So it's like, I understand if you want to look at me as a certain way, I look like a villain. I look like the bad guy. I get it. I talk about it in comedy. I feel it when I get on stage. All right, what's this straight white guy going to tell me I don't already know? Like, I get it. And the point that I've had to learn is punching up, not punching down. How I've done recaps in the past, making fun of people's plastic surgery or whatever features they have, I feel bad about that. But I don't lose sleep over it. I just don't do it anymore. I've realized that's punching down. I have a platform where I can make jokes and I can challenge myself to be funny regarding the show, and I don't have to slut shame or do whatever the case may be. And that's just something that's called evolution. We evolve, you know?
For sure. I mean, that's exactly my stance of what I used to say, that I used to, you know, make comments about women and how they looked. And like back in the day when my recaps were revolved around, while I did recap the show, a lot of the recap within the recap had to do with what a girl was wearing or how much cleavage she was showing and stuff like that. It was just, like I said, it was a sign of the times, and I don't do it anymore. So that's all I can do is get it off my website, which is what I did, and don't do it anymore. There's nothing else I can do at this point.
It's so, tone is so important. Obviously my fiance works in fashion. She's a fit model and she's worked in design. So she started a channel, just analyzing the women's fashion on the show. And she can have a conversation with me on it, talking about Tayshia's chest size in relation to like what style she goes after. She wears this style outfit over this. So it's not like talking about people's fashion or whatever is the problem. It's the objectifying and like the gratuitous nature of it, which I'll be the first to admit has been part of my YouTube in the past. And I like you, have heard feedback and realized, okay, I can do better. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, I need to start treating these contestants as if they are watching my channel versus as if they're in, like I almost saw them when I talk about punching up, not down. I saw them as better than because they were on a TV show. And now I realize they're humans. And that's kind of like where my mind has shifted, is like, they're not better than because they're on a TV show. They're humans. Now there may be cases where, you know, like Ari, I've been hitting hard because he's taking PPP loans while he's buying a second home. So it's like, obviously I can punch up and talk about that, but I'm not going to, you know, talk about his wife's, look or whatever, you know what I mean? So there is still, the framework is still there. We're just shifting what is fair game, and rightfully so, I believe.
Yeah. The problem being that, I mean, literally anything negative you see, because every single contestant that goes on the show, whether they're a first night exit or they make it to the end, every contestant on the show has a fan base. Some is bigger, some are bigger than others. So anytime you say anything negative about a contestant on this franchise, you're going to hear it. And people are going to say, why do you hate them so much? And it's just like, I don't hate them. I'm just giving my opinion on them from what I saw on the show, or maybe something that you know that you saw online, saw on their Instagram story, whatever the case may be. It's just turned into everybody has to jump on everybody else when you have an opinion on something. And it's just, it's really getting old. And, you know, you're allowed to. And I think, you know, the thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of when it comes to stand-up and all this is, just like I talked about, you know, back in the day, writing and blogs were all about objectifying women. I think the same thing kind of evolved in the comedy world, that people, I mean, if you go back to stand-ups from 10, 12 years ago, some of the things that stand-up comedians said, it would not fly now. And do they get a pass because they have the job title of comedian and their job is to tell jokes? Or is it, no, that was never acceptable. It never should have been acceptable, and they should take it out of their, you know, act right now. Like somebody like, I mean, this goes back to the 80s, but, you know, Andrew Dice Clay could not get up on stage and tell the jokes that he did in 1985 about women that he does, and get on a stage in 2021 and not be completely crucified. Correct?
Well, he actually still does in a way, but the thing is we let cartoons get away with it, and we let characters get away with it. So if you're a comedian who's in a character, which is Dice Clay, that's not his name, right? It's a character.
Yeah.
He still gets away with it because people know what they're coming to get. But I think it's like you wouldn't let a second year, you know, med student do open heart surgery, but yet, you know, good comedian, like, you know, comedy takes 20 years. It really does. You know, someone like Bill Burr, he's 25, 30 years in, he's a master. He can do a joke that sounds horrible on paper, and he can make you laugh because there is an assumption and the tension is cut that it's not like how he actually believes, you know, something. And he'll still try to get canceled by people. Every SNL he does, you know, there'll be a thing to cancel him. He laughs it off because he's bulletproof, because he's done it for so long that he understands where the boundaries are. So I don't think it's like, for me, I make fun of my fiance's age, but I do it after, and she's younger than me, but I do it after I've made fun of myself for her being the breadwinner. So I punch myself down far enough so that I can punch up and make fun of her. And it gets a laugh 100% of the time because of the framing of it all. Now, if I just was like, oh yeah, if I just randomly tweeted something without any context, people are going to read it how they're going to read it. The beauty with stand-up is that you get to present it with tone, and social media takes away tone. And that's where, I mean, and I get it. If I get a text from my mom that doesn't end in a smiley face, I think she's mad at me, or, you know what I mean? Like, so I totally get how we'll read into the way people say things. But at the same time with comedy, it's, yeah, you're playing with fire, and you shouldn't be judged on your comedy until it's almost like this. With theater, the critics aren't allowed to judge the production until, you know, you do the dress rehearsals and this and that. They're not allowed to judge it until you tell them, all right, you can start, you know, doing your critiques. We've worked it out. And with comedy, we put all of our practice on, you know, on online, and, you know, it doesn't always come off well. And don't get me wrong, there are people that are just not funny and hurtful and hateful, and they'll still get a laugh. And it's up to it's up to the comic to understand the difference. Like, is this just hateful, or is this funny? Because while I'm saying it as a first person, I'm speaking for a stereotype that exists within the country. And that's just like the balance beam you have to cross. Am I doing this in first person, or am I saying like this as generally speaking? When I do my YouTube, I'm speaking for me. You know, I have to make sure I really believe what I'm saying, because people, they can disagree, and that conversation can happen. So it's forced me to really double down on like being very impeccable with my opinions, and if I change them, to just own up to it. Yeah, I've changed my mind on that. So with comedy, I think good comedy, I mean, I do comedy every night, right? I hear the craziest stuff on stage, and I hear jokes that bomb so bad until they work. And it can be as simple as changing a word choice, as simple as changing, you know, whatever it may be. And I've been a guy, and I am, what's so funny to my other comedy friends is how unproblematic my comedy is. So whenever they hear that, like, someone's mad at me on YouTube, they're like, how could they be mad at you? You're just like, so like in stand up, I'm worried that my comedy doesn't have enough edge. And then on YouTube, it's like, how am I the guy who's like getting any, you know, having any issues? But, you know, it's just a different crowd.
Yeah, you talk about characters and stuff like that are almost, and comedians are almost, because they're behind, it's not them and it's somebody else, a character or whatever. Because almost like, you know, when I think about it, I mean, I guess it goes back to the 80s, 90s or whatever. And the one person that, you know, kind of jumps out to me is someone like Eminem, a rapper who literally all he talked about was, all he rapped about was misogynistic, homophobic. It was just a bunch of misogynistic and homophobic lyrics and, you know, saying, bitch, I'm gonna kill you. Like you can't, like, why is he allowed to get away with that? I guess now he, first off, Eminem would not be able to release an album like he did in the, you know, late 2000s, you know, that area. He couldn't release that now, but because he was a performer, like you said, it was just accepted. Could you imagine if that album that he released that got all the attention, I can't remember the name of it, but shit, all of his albums had songs that had talking about what he was going to do to other celebrities, how he was going to fuck them, all this stuff. There's no way he could release that album now just because the times have changed. But again, it was accepted back then.
Yeah. And so to even what's funny is that it sounds, and I agree with you, and it sounds like we're both the old men yelling, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
But that's the truth is that, you know, like Black Eyed Peas, they had a song called Let's Get Retarded.
Yep.
That was the name of the song. You can still listen to that version on Spotify. And of course, they didn't know, which is shocking to say, because I'm sure like 50 people signed off on this, but they thought that was a good song to have until a community of people, you know, got together and petitioned it. And now it's Let's Get It Started. They probably paid someone $100,000 to change retarded to started, right? So they changed it for the better, but that still existed only, what, I don't know, 10 years, maybe longer than 10 years ago, but in the relative near past.
Yeah.
So there's a barometer, and it's working, and I'm all for progress, and it's happening in some cases faster than others. Like, you know, a lot of gay rights has happened like almost overnight when it comes to the history of humanity. When you really think about it, it's like really been, you know, people like Obama were, you know, unwilling to say that they were pro gay marriage at the beginning of a presidency. And it's crazy to even do the math to think that that's where we were. So progress is happening, but at the same time, we have to create space for these changes to occur. And I wanted to ask you about this.
Yeah.
So I just started binge watching Survivor over the pandemic. I just never watched it, and I've loved it. And I'm watching this season, and this has to do, okay, so we know on this past season of Bachelor, Brittany Galvin was teased to have been an escort. It wasn't true at all, yet they teased that for 1, 2, or 3 episodes. Like ABC Bachelor pretty much promoted this. They didn't say her name, but they promoted this idea.
That she's involved in inappropriate relationships with married or a wealthy man or
yeah.
whatever. They kept running
yeah,
the
right.
thing that Anna said, the ITM that Anna said or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. And it's her name will Brittany Galvin's name will forever on Google be associated with all the hot takes that people had about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm watching Survivor. I'm watching old seasons, and I'm watching a season where a guy outs another guy as being a trans man.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really powerful conversation because everyone in the tribal ceremony was like, dude, what are you doing? You can't do that. There was instant blowback, but Survivor didn't tease that for the weeks leading up to it.
Nope.
So it's like, that's an Emmy winning show deciding, you know what? We don't need to sell this crazy thing that's going to happen. The guy gets fired. They have a big thing. They made it was a good story of like, dude, if in case you didn't know, you can't do that. And of course he didn't, but he still did it anyway. And I was like, that's the difference between like a show like Bachelor and a show like Survivor is that Bachelor will try to put profits above everything. And even with the issues with Chris Harrison and Rachel Kirkconnell and all these other issues, nobody's holding the Bachelor producers accountable for situations like Brittany Galvin. And that's when my channel started to take off. And I was like, hello, how is this not more of an issue? This young woman isn't getting paid and her like, and people were like, well, you know, she'll be fine. You know, that's where people go, oh, they'll be fine. No, if she ever wants to be a, I don't know, if she ever, you know, grows up and wants to be a, I don't know, own a daycare, someone's going to Google her name and be like, what? What's this? I don't need to decide if this was true or false. Let's go to the other person. Like, she should be the one suing the show for defamation because they let this cat out of the bag before they could even correct themselves on air, you know?
And the problem is that contract is literally one of the worst contracts you can sign going on the show, that a lot of contestants don't care because they don't look at the negative when they're signing to go on the show. they're thinking of all the perks that come with it. But then you got to understand that shit like that can happen. And now, you know, your name is, you know, her name is attached to it, and it sucks. And
I would, I would love for someone to challenge the contracts, because, and of course, it's just never worth anyone's time. You know, you see, they sue Luke P. They, you know, and with Luke P, it's like, maybe he was in the wrong, but why can't we just air all the conversations that happened so that he doesn't have to go on a podcast and get fined $100,000 because he's trying to defend his name? So, like, I understand they sign all these contracts, but it's like, we don't let an underage person sign a contract, but we're letting these people who, you know, the Bachelor producers, they're protected by a full legal team, ABC full legal team. And then they're just getting some 23-year-old jabroni to sign on the dotted line, and that's going to be absolve them. It's just so weighted against the contestants, but the audience at large doesn't really care because they don't look at it that way. They just go, well, you signed up for it. And it's like, well, maybe so, but like, you sign up for it with a certain good faith aspect. And in cases like Brittany Galvin, it's like, no way did she expect to be railroaded like that right when she gets on the show.
Yeah, that's the problem. There is no good faith aspect anymore. And it's 42 seasons in, and it's almost like at this point, you have to know what you're getting into. And whether or not they sit there and read all 25 pages of that contract, which I'm guessing none of them do, you have to know it specifically says in that contract they can do whatever they want to your character. They can misrepresent you. They can defame you. They can take things out of context. They can surprise you, and you have no legal recourse in return. That's the problem. It says it right there in the contract. So it's like, okay, well, it's just nobody ever going to show up to go on the show? No, because they know they're overlooking that, as in, hopefully I don't get that happen to me, so I can benefit and profit from the show. So it's like, okay, if you're going to lay in bed with the devil, you have to be able to suffer possible consequences, because some people go on the show and get a grade at it and everybody loves them. But there is that possibility that you're going to get, like you said, railroaded by this franchise. And yeah, nobody holds them accountable. I've been talking about it for years. I've called them out for all the stuff they do behind the scenes, and nothing's ever going to happen. Their show's going to continue to be made, but that's where I feel like I can try and at least help, and at least help the audience understand a bit about what really goes on behind the scenes of the show. And yes, you get your fans that are like, wow, that is messed up. And then you get your fans that are like, this is what they signed up for. They should know by now. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And my view of that is that's just too simple-minded to be like, come on, you're on the show. You're on the reality show. But I agree. I think though that, yeah, when, you know, this is going to sound, you know, to any haters, this is going to sound like such a nosebleed thing to say, but journalism is about like speaking truth to power. So it calls out conspiracies. It calls out backdoor deals. It unearths the bad things. Mm-hmm. And with regards to Bachelor, the show, the franchise, it's good to be like pulling the calling bullshit when you see it, because this show began in a world that didn't have social media, really. And now it exists in a world where we can start calling out nonsense. And you said laying with the devil. So I wanted to cover Cassie Randolph and Colton Underwood. Mm-hmm. So Cassie Randolph had Brian Freeman, power attorney, as her attorney, which is who represented Chris Harrison. Do you believe that Colton Underwood paid her off? And if so, how much do you think he paid?
Oh, I don't even, I haven't heard any sort of number. I don't know anything about, other than what has been revealed to the public. But yeah, I have not heard anything in regards to money or whatever. But again, just like the Chris Harrison situation, as much as people want to know what really went down and what they agreed to and why she, you know, took the restraining order off the table and they settled, I don't think we're ever going to get an answer.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But when it comes to good faith, when she, I'm assuming, and this is, I have no information, but I'm assuming he paid her $50,000 to $100,000 only because she had Brian Friedman, who's known as like the go-to shark. He gets everyone their money, and he releases the statement. She doesn't say anything about it. It was so suspect, considering it was such like a smoking gun violation where he stalked and harassed her. And I read all the text messages, which was my first video that took off. I got like 250,000 views because I sat down and read every wild text message he sent her from a fake phone number, from a fake alias he concocted to all this other stuff, all these dealings where he was caught in their alley and this and that. Yeah. And so many people, I couldn't believe this. So many people messaged me saying, I'm so glad you're talking about this as a guy. And I had to really think about that. It's kind of like when you think about positions of power, you don't think you're in a position of power. I didn't think anyone gave two shits what I had to say about it because I have nothing to do with it. But it just, it was powerful for women to hear a guy speak out against that. And I think most guys would have done the same thing I did, being like, this is ridiculous. If any of my buddies were doing this and I knew about this, we'd have a real heart to heart. You know, we'd have to really nip this in the bud, whether it's desperation. And what we know in hindsight is, and this is his words, not mine, that he was like clutching onto the last straws of heterosexuality, right? He's trying to make the relationship work because of essentially, in some ways, the world we live in, where growing up in Illinois, he couldn't be gay. So for all that to happen, and then she didn't say anything about it, I respect her decision to not go through with it, because I understand you get dragged into the court system, it's expensive and all that. But at the same time, I do hope a situation comes about where she does share her story, because I'm pretty sure she signed on the dotted line, this is what I would assume, she got a check to be quiet, hush money, and then she thought it would be done. And now he's going to get a Netflix show. He says they're going to address it on the Netflix show. So if he's going to, if this is going to continuously kind of like tail his career, I don't see why she doesn't get the right to her side. And, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see how it all goes down. But
yeah, it's certainly interesting. And I don't know what she's going to do now that he's going to be able to tell her side. Clearly, she's going to want to see what happens on this Netflix show and what exactly he says. And maybe if he says something that gets under her skin enough to where it's like, wait a second, this isn't the full thing. He's giving you his side to make it seem like it's not as bad as it was. Here is what I actually went through. Maybe that'll happen. I mean, But with this agreement that they have, I don't know, because if they had an agreement, why is he allowed to do a Netflix show and talk about it? There's just so many questions.
Exactly. It should violate the agreement. It should void it. And then, you know, whatever. I mean, if he paid her $50,000, I would start a GoFundMe in 2 seconds to raise $50,000 and get her story out there. Because if she's willing, but people say, oh, you know, she's moving on. It's like, I don't think that's how it works when you're the victim of being stalked and harassed. I don't think you just get to, you know, check your windows every night to make sure they're locked and not have this in the back of your head. And people go, you know, some people thought it was crazy I was comparing it to OJ, but it was like OJ stalked and harassed, you know, whatever, before he was, you know, before that went down. And it's important for the platform to discuss this because I got thousands of people emailing, commenting that have been victims in their own right. And it's an important conversation to be had. And it's another example where hush money was paid and then the conversation, and then we don't get to learn from it. And I respect Cassie taking the money. I really do. I understand, you know, what would have happened if this went to court, but like he hasn't denied anything. So I'm assuming there's receipts and tracking IDs on his tracking device. I mean, you know, I'm assuming that's all legitimate that happens. And I'd like to know all of the ins and outs as to why. Like maybe in his mind, he just wanted to prove she was dating the other guy so he could move on with his life, which still is wildly not right. It's still wrong. But I'd rather hear it talked out and get more of that info. And I've had my foot on the gas trying to get something out of him. He says yesterday, you know, because he was thrown into that PPP, you know, his charity took money for loans. And yeah. I've always kind of been suspect of his charity. But I think at this point, you have to be suspect of anything he does, because, you know, that's just the case. You know, he says he came out of the closet because he was being blackmailed. And then Elizabeth Wagmeister reports on Variety that they corroborated the fact that he was being blackmailed. And it's like, what? So we don't think he could have made up text messages? He already did that. So the whole situation I'm calling bullshit on, you know. It's innocent until proven guilty, until you've crossed the line and showed that you're willing to lie for your own self-preservation. So then he posts yesterday, I don't fuck with Bachelor Nation, they don't fuck with me, in regards to the fact that people were lumping him in with the PPP stuff. And it's like, I guess it's hard to untangle the Christmas lights here and say you don't fuck with Bachelor Nation after going on literally every show they offer and reaping all of the benefits from it. You know?
Yeah. Unless he's just saying that. I mean, I kind of see what he's saying. He's saying now, but still it just doesn't. Yeah. We get, you don't fuck with them now, but you loved fucking with them back when they gave you every opportunity to, you know?
Exactly.
But, you know, and the other thing was when that whole thing with Colton and Cassie came up, I remember when I posted that story. I didn't give any opinion on it. I posted the story when it first came out, and just reading the stuff underneath it, again, goes along the lines of what we say. Everybody's got a fan base, and all the Colton fans immediately jump to, she's making it up. How do we know these are real texts? She never liked him to begin with. She's reaping the benefits now. It's just like, that's what I mean. Like, you can't say anything about anybody anymore because facts don't matter. Yeah, it's everybody's own self-truths.
Yeah, there's a hierarchy to, like, a belief system. So for those that supported Colton because of his virginity and his Christianity, they're going to believe him because of that religious connection over believing women. And then most have changed their mind, but most have also said, they'll say, oh yeah, he did the tracking device, but she let him on. It's like, well, we're not having that conversation. That's so wrong. But what you learn in Bachelor Nation is that there's a direct correlation between, like, where people stand with the identity kind of politics in Bachelor Nation and where the country stands. We just live in a divided country. And I think most people, the more information they get, agree on things. But when the information is presented in a certain way, whether it be the way Bachelor edits the show or how you read news or headlines, people's opinions, like, we're way easier. It's way easier to manipulate humans than I think we give credit for. And the best we can do, you, myself, Whit and Rye, anybody out there, is to just try to share as much of a story as possible. That's really the best we can do.
No, and that's it's a great way to end the podcast, because it really is. It's just something to where we're at this point where all we're doing is trying to give the most amount of information about a show that, you know, the production side, the powers that be behind this franchise are just, they don't tell you anything. And they're not transparent at all. And I think transparency is something this franchise really needs a lot more of, because I can't think of one thing that they've said outside of one blanket generic statement that they gave regarding Chris Harrison. And then Chris Harrison gives a 3-sentence goodbye on Instagram for a show he hosted 19 years. Like, there's so much that they're not saying and they haven't addressed to this point. And it's just, and like I said, the Chris Harrison stuff probably is never going to get addressed because of this settlement. But, you know, it's all we can do is just provide as much information as possible, give our opinions. And for those that listen to myself or those that watch Dave's YouTube videos, just know, because just because you give an opinion on somebody that might be negative or somebody that you like, it doesn't mean we hate them, and we doesn't mean we wish them to hell. It just means that, hey, we saw this on TV, here's our opinion of it. Or in maybe my case, sometimes I know a little bit more, and that's how I formed my opinion. But even I'm kind of, you know, getting away from that. And it's just, like you said, we're in a divided country for sure. And there's no more divided fan base than Bachelor Nation, or as Rachel Lindsay recently called it, Bachelor Clan.
Well, to her credit, she did say Bachelor Clan is a subsect of Bachelor.
Subsect, yeah. Yeah.
No, so that was in reference, just like our country has a subsect of alt-right or whatever the situation might be, there is a group within Bachelor Nation that is wildly close-minded.
Yes.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah, no, it's, they come out in full force a lot on a lot of topics. And everybody, like I said, we live in this hot take world where everybody's got to have the hot take of the day. And so much of this franchise, not everything is so black and white. There is so much gray, but it's not fun to sit in the gray because that's kind of boring and neutral and not the hard hitting opinion. And unfortunately, yeah, People don't want to see it that way or don't realize that's the way it is.
It's the algorithm that teaches that hot take. But I do believe, like, podcasting and long form content is really popular because people go, oh, I got something out of that. And I believe you and I will both get some emails from people going, you know what, I got something out of that discourse. Now imagine if you just, you know, decided to take the year off and put your head in the sand. People aren't going to get that. And, you know, that's kind of what it all comes down to, is just being like, you know, knowing, you know, some people are just going to hear keywords and hear this and hear that. Are you on my side or the other? But for the most part, again, same thing with comedy. If you go up there with the intention and mean well, you're gonna figure it out. You're gonna kind of like fail upwards into the right direction.
Yeah, no doubt. Dave, this was a great talk. Went a lot longer than I thought, but I'm glad we hit on a lot of topics within this franchise. I'll be coming on your show soon to talk about some of this stuff yet again. And then, but yeah, I really appreciated the conversation today. I hope people actually, you know, digest it and listen to it, as opposed to, like you said, have you put out 30 minutes of content and they respond with one sentence. You know, it's just like, clearly they didn't either take the time to watch everything you did, or were very close-minded and didn't want to maybe open their mind up to something else. So
it was a great convo. I could have made 7 videos today. Now I'm only going to make 4. That's okay.
No,
and like I said, it's really funny that you reached out to me, because I was literally going to text you the same day, being like, oh, as a fellow recap kind of guy, even though you're on a next level. You have much bigger numbers, but I was like, I don't want the recappers to be the story here. So I didn't message you, but I kind of wanted to give a heads up and be like, hey man, like I get what you're doing. I understand it all. And all that. So when you reached out, I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give you credit. I wanted to give you credit because we all get to draft behind you. So when you're running a long race, whoever's in the front of the race, they get the wind, they get the snow, the whatever. And then everyone gets to run behind that person in the front of the race and not get exposed to the elements. So I totally understand that when I'm saying like, oh, Reality Steve reported that I'm drafting behind you along with E! News, Us Weekly, and all these other people. So like, that's your position of power, Steve.
No, I appreciate it, because there are Instagram accounts that don't, and they just take my stuff. And I changed it up a little bit today on my Instagram, where when I broke down what I had written in my column that's on my Instagram feed, I made sure to put @RealitySteve in the text. So anybody that copies and pastes what I write, they can't get away from where it came from, because they like doing that as well. But that's, there's only so
credit
much I can
your
do.
Sources.
Yeah, that's only so much I can do. I understand that some people are not going to do it or don't want to credit me or whatever, but you're a guy that always has. And I appreciated you actually not taking the wit and wry stuff and immediately just like, oh, he wasn't sorry, and he doesn't realize he was wrong, and actually understanding what I was trying to say, even if I wasn't maybe the greatest at explaining it. Because when you're sitting there and you're talking into a camera, I'm not used to talking into a camera. I'm better talking into a microphone, I think. So,
it's we're different. All humans. I mean, you get the adrenaline rush. You feel one way or another, and I totally get it. Like we're not polished reading off a teleprompter. This is humanity. Everyone's trying their best.
Yeah. No. So I appreciated you doing that breakdown of the Wit Rye video. I'll include it on my website today, and I'll be on yours coming up shortly. So, Dave, if you want to check out Dave's YouTube videos, his recaps, and basically his takes on everything that's going on in Bachelor World, it's YouTube. Just go to Dave Neal, NEAL. His Instagram is DNealZ. Check him out there. So, Dave, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You got it. We'll be in touch.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Bye. Thanks so much to Dave for that. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. It was a lot of fun. Hit a lot of topics. And, it's I know it's going to be divisive, just because there's people that just don't want to actually take the time to dissect a lot of things. They want to stick to headlines, and they want to stick to talking points and clickbait stuff. And, the bottom line is not everything should be boiled down to that. There's a lot more deeper conversations that need to be had about things that are going on in this franchise and for that matter, in this country. So, I think Dave did an excellent job explaining it, that there's just a different standard that we live by now, and things weren't that way years ago. And it's better to talk about it than to just sweep it under the rug and say nothing. And yeah, I understand that, sometimes when you do apologize, it comes across as an excuse. But even if I say it's not an excuse, the second I start talking about anything or explaining something, it's like I'm making an excuse. I'm like, no, we're talking about this because it needs to be talked about. So hopefully people can understand that. And we go from there. But thanks to Dave for coming on. Thank you for all listening. Please rate, subscribe, and review an Apple Podcast. It is much appreciated. We'll be back next week with another podcast. So for Dave Neal, I'm Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week. See you.